Hello? Hello? Oh, is Sylvie?
Oh, Sylvie, come on in. Yes, Ethel told me she went back to for a visit to Nova Scotia, and she said that you might be coming.
I have had a scare about my health, oh mon Dieu. Ethel says I must come and learn.
Sure, come on in.
Welcome, everyone, to Dr. Heather Uncensored. I'm so excited to speak with Christina Hildebrand today. She's president of both a Voice for Choice Advocacy and a Voice for Choice. She will explain to you the difference there. But she's an activist, an advocate, and an educator, and her work is in these nonprofits. So, Christina, tell me a little bit more about a Voice for Choice.
Sure. So we have, as you mentioned, we have two nonprofits, and the reason for that is that one is tax deductible, A Voice for Choice, and with that we can educate. We cannot lobby with it, or we can't extensively lobby and advocate. And so then we also have a Voice for Choice Advocacy, which is a 501c4, also a nonprofit, but not tax deductible, and that allows us to do lobbying up in Sacramento, and allows us to hire lobbyists as well. So those are the two organizations we have. And I founded both of them in 2015 during the SB 277 okay. in Sacramento.
Right, when there was no choice.
Yes, so the SB 277 took away the personal belief exemption in California for vaccines in schools.
Right.
And this last year we had SB 276 and 714, which basically tightened up the medical exemption to only allow very, very strict criteria of the medical exemptions.
Exactly. Yeah, I was helping to fight this last
yep.
one, 276. So I just kind of want to go back to who you are and what was your impetus to get this going? Because what I really want this audience to understand is that I'm finding there's certain people, and you know, the nurses and the doctors, certain friends of mine, or people I've known in the past, who really have put a wall up to the new information, and let alone that it's our choice, but to even learn more about what the facts are out there. So I guess what I want to understand from you is that you have this motivation to let people know that they do have a choice. And what is that? How did that come to be?
Yeah, so I should also say that, you know, the vaccine issue is probably the one that we're pigeonholed for. Both our organizations, our mission is to educate and advocate for informed choice and transparency of anything that goes into your body. So we
Wonderful.
Do other than vaccines, just sort of as a background. We do things other than vaccines. We do a lot of work with the pesticides and labeling of, you know, we basically want you to know what's in the products, and then you get to choose whether you put those in your body or not.
Exactly.
And so how did I get into it? It started now 15 years ago when my oldest daughter, I was pregnant with her, and I had just moved to California, and I, you know, first pregnancy, really wanted to make sure that, you know, I didn't have any toxins in me and was super, you know, type A personality on this first pregnancy.
Right.
And wanted to make sure I was doing everything possible to keep her healthy and you know, just myself healthy as well.
Right.
So I started looking into, you know, what did I want from my birth? And, you know, at that point, there wasn't very much on vaccines on the internet, you know, or anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I pulled down a birthing plan, and in it, you know, it went through everything. It went through, you know, if you're having a boy, do you want circumcision? If you're, you know, do you want to have the baby washed or not? Do you want the eye goop? Do you want all of the things that happen in a hospital? And I was at that point sure, you know, I was going to have the baby in a hospital. And so I started researching. And one of the things on this list was the hepatitis B vaccine. And I, you know, at that point, all I knew was hepatitis B is a sexually transmitted disease. Like, why does my baby need this vaccine?
Exactly.
So I started researching, and, you know, I'm, as I said, I'm a type A personality. I'm a researcher by career. And so I went down the rabbit hole and I never really came back out. We started, my partner and I started by having, you know, saying, okay, well, we don't really need the hepatitis B shot. Like, that seems silly.
Yeah.
Let's just push that one off. And then we went to the first month back, or before the first month vaccines, we went and looked at, you know, well, okay, I personally had measles, mumps, rubella, whooping cough, like all the diseases when I was a child, chicken.
Yeah.
And so I was breastfeeding my child. And so the more research I did, I realized, well, actually my child, you know, has the immunity from me in the breast. Yeah. Yeah. And so we basically, you know, it wasn't that, you know, before any of this research, if you'd asked me for what was in a vaccine, I would have told you, you know, well, the virus and some saline water. Like, I had no idea about vaccines. I was very limited vaccines because I grew up in the UK and we had a lot less vaccines than in the US. I also got all the diseases. So I didn't I didn't need to be vaccinated for them. And so I was vaccinated. I am vaccinated, but for a very limited, I asked my mom for my records and I had 7 vaccines as a child. Yeah. But I didn't know anything about them going into this. And so that really, you know, I then started reading and reading and reading and reading. And at that point there wasn't what there is on the internet. There also wasn't all the new research that was going on with autoimmune disorders and all of that. Right. We basically just pushed it off and we were like, you know what? Okay, this month we don't really need any of these vaccines to keep her safe. Right. Let's push it off by a month. And then, you know, the more reading I did, the more I realized that, wow, there is a lot of risk involved with vaccines.
Right.
Looking at the benefit to the risk, what is that? And so it wasn't, you know, up until 2015 when SB277 came around, nobody knew that my child was unvaccinated or my children were unvaccinated, except for our doctor, the pediatrician, and the school. We had a personal belief exemption on file.
Right.
To me, we shouldn't know people's vaccine status. You know, that's a health, you know, if I had cancer, I wouldn't be spreading, you know, I wouldn't be telling everyone or questioning, you know, what are you doing for your cancer? You know, that kind of thing. Like, it's, to me, it's a private health matter and it's your decision to do that or not. The big farce to me is the people that say, oh, well, if your child's unvaccinated, they're a threat to my child. Well, if you don't have vaccines so much, then vaccinate your child and my child no longer is a threat to yours unless vaccines don't work. And I guess there are a small number of children who are immunocompromised that can't be vaccinated. But for those children, they shouldn't be in school. I mean, they're just as likely to get something that's not vaccine preventable, like, you know, hand and foot and mouth or disease and or you know, a cold or, you know, any of those things or the flu that didn't get covered by the flu vaccine.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So to me, if your kid is that sick, they shouldn't be out and about. If you're the other thing that we do is we, you know, we have babies out and about since from day one. I mean, I see these tiny babies in the supermarket. I'm like, your baby shouldn't be here.
Your child
make a conscious decision of, you know, of protecting your child and the vaccines, you know, even if they were, they're not 100% effective. So, you know, you have to protect your children otherwise and yourself otherwise. So anyway, long story short, I got into it like that. SB277 came along in 2015. I started off by just wanting to be one of the crowd. I was willing to go up to Sacramento, you know, every rally, every everything. And it got to the Senate Education Committee hearing. And we were all up there. We had the votes. And the chair looked at Senator Pan and said, you don't have the votes today. Would you like to postpone the vote next week? And Senator Pan looked at his lobbyist and came back and said, yes. And all of us got up, 1,000 people, you know, got up and went home. And to no fault of ours, you know, that's, we need, you know, we have stuff to do. We have work, we have kids, we have
anything
else to do. But what it told me was, wow, we should have someone there this week to try and get those votes, but we don't have anyone there. And that's when I looked into hiring a lobbyist and I became much more, I was pissed at that point.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm like, how can you do this? You don't have the votes.
Yeah.
Kill this bill now and you have a second chance. And it was just so frustrating. And so that's when I basically thought, you know, we need a lobbyist. I hate the concept of lobbyists. Like, right. You shouldn't have to pay someone to have a voice. Our 1,000 people there should have been the voice.
Right.
It was clear that that wasn't happening. And so we ended up hiring a lobbyist, Roxanne Gould, but she only came on when it went to the assembly. And, you know, basically by that point, it was too late. We did make some wins. I mean, the number of votes in the assembly was was closer than it would have been if we hadn't hired. And, you know, there were a couple of other, there was one other organization that, or one other group that, that also hired a lobbyist. Uh-huh. And I think, you know, the other thing is the activists, the grassroots worked out what they needed to do, you know, go to district meetings. I mean, we were thrown into this and nobody knew how that building works and what we needed to do.
Right. Yes, a lot of education in terms of going to legislators.
Yeah. And so, you know, jump forward 4 years, we knew Senator Pam was going to introduce this bill this year. You know, the writing was on the wall in 2018 or last year, in 2018. And we proactively went and talked to legislators. We proactively did everything. When he dropped the bill, we had two lobbyists that basically we hired right away. And we hired a third lobbyist throughout the course of this. And, you know, it didn't make, I say it didn't, in the end, you know, what did the bill do? It didn't make, it didn't get us anywhere. But it was extremely valuable because us as an organization, we are now seen as one of the few professional organizations in the Capitol that is, you know, that is professional and wants to make change in that way in the Capitol. And so we did benefit from that. And I do think, you know, we will over the next 3 years chip away. We have to wait till 2023 when Senator Pan is out of office and Lorena Gonzalez is out of office.
Right.
Or then nothing, you know, he will let nothing go through. I think the other piece is that he is so confident in a sort of pompous way.
Yes.
That he, you know, he wouldn't, we met with so many legislators and, you know, they had issues with the bill and they would talk to him about amendments. And he just basically said, I don't have to have any amendments because I know I can get this through. I know I've got the votes to get this through.
Right.
When you stand in, and I think that's why people in California got so angry.
Right.
So frustrated is because, you know, when you have somebody who's closed the door on you, the only thing to do is shout louder.
Yeah.
You know, we've worked in the past 4 years on many, many pieces of legislation. And most of them, you know, if you have an issue with their legislation, you go into the author's office, have a meeting with him and say, look, these are our issues. Can we change, you know, can we work on an amendment for X, Y, and Z to make it, you know, more palpable?
Right.
Senator Pan doesn't talk to anyone. I mean, he literally is sort of the man in the high castle that
right.
has the door shut and that's it.
Right. Yes, the arrogance is so annoying.
Arrogance is a good word, yes.
And I really appreciate, because we lobbied Assembly Member Adrian Nazarian, and that was, I come from Canada. I was so pleased that he changed his vote because of the education.
Yeah. He is one of the ones that we had many conversations with him, and he really gets it.
Yeah.
You know, it really comes down to, I mean, when you look at the final vote, we had 15 Democrats and 17, I think it was, Republicans vote no on, or abstain or vote no on the bill. Same thing, you know. Abstention is there, you know, but we can't do a no vote, but we'll stay off the bill. But that was completely, yes, all the people that voted yes were Democrats, but we had a large, significant portion of Democrats that said, I'm not voting on this. This is not a good bill.
And right.
Them were, I mean, Nazarian was a co-author on SB 277.
Yeah.
There were many co-authors on SB 277. Ben Allen was another one that laid off this bill and were just like, you know, we're not in agreement with this. And so I think there is movement forward in that direction.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, with Senator Pan as the head of the Health Committee, I just don't see it, you know, us getting very far until he's gone out of office. Right.
Well, he has the force, you know, California's medical association.
Yes.
So, I mean, they don't even realize that they are the predominant medical system and that there are other systems. I mean, that's what's so shocking to me, that coming to California, that it can be so regressive. And so the ignorance is so strong. And I just want to go back to what you...
Go ahead.
Were you going to say something?
No, I just wanted to say something about the California Medical Association, because they are an interesting group to me. And I've spent a lot of time looking at them. They only represent, I think it's 30%, 27% of physicians. So there are 75% of physicians that they do not represent.
Right.
That are not part of them, yet they are a vocal voice in Sacramento, a strong vote, you know, basically there's a body going in there. The other thing with them is, if you look at all the legislation up to 276, all of the legislation that they have supported or opposed, they do not support legislation that involves databases and sharing of information, which SB276 was, and they do not support legislation that takes away the right of the physician and puts it in someone else's hands, which SB276 did.
Right.
Putting it in, I mean, it took away the medical board's role and put it in the hands of the California Public Health Department.
Exactly.
Things, if you look at every other piece of legislation. So the CMA, while they were the sponsors of this bill, it made no sense at all. And no,
exactly.
Going on there that's beyond our knowledge. But
right. I know. In some ways for me, I look at this whole thing and I go, okay, so we're supposed to go through this to see how ridiculous certain things are and how repressive they are and how uninformed, like you said, if they're not looking at databases or they're not looking at the facts, they're not looking at the science, which is really what's been happening. And I just, before I forget, I just want to go back to when you said, you know, you became like this type A personality and you went down that rabbit hole. And, you know, for me as a naturopathic physician, you know, this has been my drumbeat for over about 35 years or something, right? So I'm thrilled that so many people understand about detox and how that's, you know, as important as nutrition, if not more these days.
Yeah.
And the fact that what I see when people, you know, friends of mine who are either a medical doctor or nurses and they get their backup and they're so, they have to have this vaccine, they don't really have thought about it. They haven't separated it out and they haven't, you know, but that there's nothing to go put in that little space that they have for vaccines when they don't understand what natural medicine can do, you know,
how
we heal our bodies and how we have to get these detoxes out, how we have to get them, how what plants can do, what homeopathy can do, what positive, you know, what thinking, understanding how, where your thoughts are going. And I think that's kind of the missing link with this, is that's why, like, they don't have anything to rest on, or they unless you experience, unless you go through something.
Yeah.
Like, even for me, I mean, I've treated lots and lots of people, obviously, over the years, but it's sometimes it was like when I had Graves' disease, maybe I think it was about 8-10 years ago, I really saw what our medicine could do, because even though I was told by people in naturopathic medicine, oh, you can't treat that, you have to have your thyroid removed, I went, nope, because I'm that kind of type A personality too, that I will not do that. I will not take drugs. My mother gave me so many drugs when I was a kid. I had candida. I mean, you know, but and when I saw what I could do, it even gave me more impetus to say and to say, you know, this medicine, this, you know, we need to understand what's going on in the world, and we need to.
Yeah. Well, I think it is a huge issue. And it's interesting because people say, well, you know, what happens if I stop vaccinating, you know, And, you know, I worry, you know, to me, if you're not going to vaccinate or you're going to stop vaccinating, and, you know, this is true for any disease, it's not just those that there are vaccines for, but you have to also take the step of being in charge of your nutrition, of your health, you know, exercise, whatever, of your living space. You know, you have to take charge of that and pay attention to it. And, you know, the unfortunate thing in the US, and I say the US because I know the US better than anything else, it doesn't mean that it excludes anywhere else, is that the US population is so reliant on medication and on pills
that exactly. Ridiculous.
Quickly. It's the quick fix.
Right.
It's not the, you know, I tell this story. There's a friend of mine who I'm no longer friends with because of the vaccine issue.
Right.
But when I was friends, we went out for breakfast and, you know, I ordered my breakfast and he ordered like this huge pile of food and bacon and I eat bacon, but you know, right. And like just this humongous amount of food.
Uh-huh.
And he was overweight. And I just looked at him. I was like, wow. And he said, you know, it's amazing. Now that I'm on cholesterol drugs, I can eat whatever I want. It's fabulous. And my cholesterol doesn't go up. And I just looked at him.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Like, talk about not getting it. Like, really.
Right. Not getting it.
And you know, I think that's where our society, for the most part, people still trust their doctors, which is a problem because the pharmaceutical industry is so in those doctors' offices drugs. And, you know, what you get from your doctor is who came in last from the sales rep or best job, you know, selling their drugs.
Yeah.
But you also have to recognize, you know, that people, food is cheap, you know, so they go for the cheapest food. They don't understand that, okay, if I spent a little bit more on healthy food, I would actually in the long term be spending less on healthcare.
Exactly.
People get put on one drug and then, you know, there's a side effect for that drug. So they get put on another drug. So suddenly they're on, you know, 6 to 8 drugs and everything's colliding down and they're into the system, so to speak. And I agree with you. I think the time when I have seen people come out of the system, unless they're naturally oriented towards, you know, natural medicine or natural food and, you know, that way of lifestyle, is when they are so deep into the Western medicine and nothing is working. And the doctors, we really have no idea what's wrong with you. And then they go, okay, I need to find something else. And somebody says, well, why not try Chinese medicine? Or why not try a naturopath? Or why not try chiropractic? They slowly come out and they realize there's this other side to health, but it really takes a trigger in order to do that. And I think that sort of, it flows into the vaccine issue, which is most people don't spend the time researching vaccines. It's, you know, with their babies and they trust the doctor. And when the doctor comes in and says, okay, we've got 5 shots today, every mother's gut goes, oh crap. Like, I don't want to, like, this is not what I want to do.
Yeah.
But they do it because they trust the doctor.
Yeah.
They don't do the research on it. And it's only usually, I mean, there are more and more people are doing research. Don't get me wrong. But you know, so many people don't vaccinate because their child had a vaccine injury, not because they knew about it first.
Exactly.
You know, people,
now they have to live with that for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
I know.
So I think it's, you know, I think we're absolutely making noise and waking people up and getting people to research earlier. But I think people are still, you know, the amount of fear that is put in people about getting sick is crazy. You know?
Yeah. That's why I'm doing the Dr. Heather Uncensored. I'm trying to give people really state-of-the-art information so they can make up their mind. One thing I want, it's interesting because just for the audience to know, is that Christina's car actually broke down. So as I was waiting for her, a friend of mine from Vancouver sent me this interview with Diana Beersford Kroger. Are you familiar with her?
I'm not.
Okay, so she's actually from Ireland, but she lives in Canada now. And it's interesting that I actually just listened to this because I think it's really appropriate. She is a botanist, and her family died in a car accident when she was 11, and she was raised by the Irish elders, so she learned all this ancient wisdom. And I was thinking about the people who get on my case and, you know, say, oh, about vaccines or whatever, that most of my friends, I would say probably 100% really, are really understand climate change and really understand that our planet is in a really precarious position right now. And so what Diana is talking about is the fact that we really need to, she talks about planting trees, and she says that she goes on and talks about what like forest bathing does, if you are in the trees, and that these trees actually give off an aerosol of things that like limonene and this alpha pinene, and that what that actually does is that it heightens our immune system and it increases the T cell ratio, increases the neutrophils and the you know, like the phagocytes, she called them, I think she called them gobbling up cells. But she is a scientist, and she talks about like when you go into a forest, and so for a month after that, your body is on high alert for any kind of, you know, whether it's a pathogen or it's a toxic particle, and it's going to fight against that for a whole month. It shields the body and against cancer. So I just think that people need this education to understand that, as she says, the body itself decides what it needs. We don't know why that happens. The body actually can decide that. But what we have as in our immune system is far more than the immune system they talk about with the humoral, which the vaccine is supposed to increase the antibodies.
I think the core of what you're saying is something that I say all the time, which is we really have no idea. We think, you know, the scientists think know what our body, how our body functions. We have no idea. I mean, we are at the, you know, it's similar to, I equate it to the genes. You know, initially it was, oh, we have a gene with 23 pieces to it and that's it. Now they, you know, there's epigenetics, there's RNA, there's, you know, all of the stuff, and it can change and it can, you know, and we have really, that's where we're at. We know this tiny little piece, but we have no clue how our body really, really works. And every individual's body is different. And so, you know, the fact that we have, you know, that the pharmaceutical industry has created vaccines, has created all these drugs, they do things, but we have no idea what else they do to the body. And that's the piece that, you know, it really pushes me to ask people, you know, do your research, I'm fine. If you really come to the conclusion and you've done your research and you really think vaccines are the best way forward for yourself, go for it. I'm not going to stop you.
No, it's their choice.
You've done the research and know the information. The other thing I say to everyone is, okay, fine. If you're not going to vaccinate, then you do need to know what happens if you or your child gets the measles. What are you going to do?
Right.
If you feed them a, you know, sad diet and you feed them and they're not, their immune system isn't supported, your child could be incredibly sick with the measles. So, you know, you have to do your due diligence on both sides. You know, if you're not going to vaccinate or you're not going to take Western medicine or you're going to do alternative treatments, you need to know what you're doing and how you're supporting your body.
Exactly. And that to me is, you know, this whole thing about, well, Samoa, so many people have died in Congo. Well, have you ever been, like my first husband lived in Samoa, that he went over to the South Pacific because there wasn't enough nutrition in people's diets. Uh-huh. So we're looking at low vitamin A. People don't understand why are we not, it's a lot about nutrition that people just don't have the proper nutrition. Why aren't we talking about that?
Yeah. Well, and then there's also the piece of vaccine failure, you know, I mean, the, and that's something that, you know, I would love to get from the Samoan government. I don't think they're going to release it, but when we looked at the Disneyland, there's an article, journal article on the Disneyland outbreak in California in 2015. And I think it's 40%, maybe 45% of the people who had the measles in that outbreak had the vaccine strain measles. So it was from a vaccinated person shedding that spread all of those measles. So it's, you know, and yes, half of them were wild measles, but, you know, and then you look at how many of the people who got measles were actually vaccinated, you know, and we're looking at the measles and who gets the measles. It's, you know, the babies and the older people, the, you know, above 18.
But why are the babies? I mean, the babies should be protected from their mothers. So the mothers probably.
Oh, but they're not, because this generation of babies
vaccinated.
Parents are their mothers are vaccinated. And so they don't have that. You know, herd immunity the true herd immunity. They don't
true herd, exactly
from their passed on from their mother. In that sense, the vaccines have done a huge disservice to our population, because the babies, the people who are most vulnerable from, you know, these childhood diseases, measles, mumps, pertussis, rubella, you know, chickenpox, if it is serious, if a, you know, under 3 month old gets those diseases, it is serious. But we used to have protection for that. We no longer have protection for that. So it's, you know, and they're too young for most of those vaccines to get vaccinated. And so, you know, in that sense, we've done a real disservice to our population.
Exactly. And so maybe you could just sort of explain that. I just want to clarify that, the fact that when mothers have been vaccinated before, that they're not able to protect their babies now. And so we are people relying on the vaccine for the babies instead of coming from the mother, which is obviously far better. Yeah, there's just so much there. In some ways, it's very simple. And in some ways, it's become quite complex because we're dealing with people that are refuting, in fact, what the facts are.
Yes. Although it comes out, I mean, I don't know if you saw just recently, the World Health Organization had a vaccine safety summit. And there's a wonderful clip that sort of summarizes all these scientists basically saying, yeah, we haven't done the research, we haven't done the safety study, we don't really know the safety of adjuvants, we don't really know the safety of this. You know, if we're in a place that we don't know the safety of something, then why are we mass, you know, injecting it into our healthy children?
Yeah. And it's just an easy question, you know. I think it's people just don't want to ask that question because it becomes too terrifying. Things are terrifying enough right now on the planet.
Well, and it becomes overwhelming, I think, is the other piece of it.
Yes. And the fear is overwhelming. Yeah,
it's much easier to live under your rock and just do what you're told to do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are days when I'm just like, oh my God, I wish I hadn't gone down all these rabbit holes, because I'm sure I'd be a much happier person just living under my rock. Probably not very healthy, but, but I wouldn't know all this stuff.
Right. That's why people do have blinders on, right? They just want to live in their little cocoon.
Yeah.
And I totally agree. I feel the same way. I mean, I started out, I moved to the forest in Nova Scotia, and then I had to come out. But I go back, and I'm still wanting to go back, and too much to do out here.
Yes, exactly. But I think the tide is turning on many of these issues. You know, I mean, another big one is the glyphosate issue and Monsanto's cover up. I think the opioid issue, I mean, the one thing that amazes me is that these pharmaceutical, you know, giants like Merck, you know, they're in the mid, and J&J, they're in the midst of this opioid crisis and being, you know, everyone thinks they're the devil for the opioid crisis, but yet they're God when it comes to vaccines. And it's just, I feel like that the glyphosate cover-ups, I think people are becoming more questioning of, do these big corporations really have our best interests in mind? And are they corrupt?
Right.
And I think it will, you know, I think in the next, I mean, the good thing is that we have social media. We are much more in contact with the rest of the world and have access, while it's censored a lot of the time, but do have access to alternative information, or, you know, so that you can work out for yourself what you believe in. But I think we are coming to a point where this big corporations just don't have the trust that they had, you know, in 50 years ago, let's say. And I think we will see the tobacco science come out on vaccines, on, you know, it's coming out on the glyphosate. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've watched it. I think we've gone through decades ourselves watching things. We can see it. And I think that I don't know if you do this kind of research, but to go back to even what was going on in the late 1800s and then with the Flexner Report of 1910. Are you familiar with the Flexner Report?
I am, yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, when people start understanding what happened with Rockefeller and Carnegie and what they did to change the history of what could have been many different systems of medicine, you know, whether it's allopathic or naturopathic or homeopathic or Chinese medicine, you know, then people will see that they actually did have a choice back then. And now the choice is so less obvious. And so I think with what you do with A Voice for Choice is just so fantastic, because you really are getting out there with facts and science and telling people, you know, helping them make up their minds in a way that is not out there in other venues.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's our big thing is, you know, we want you, we can tell you stuff, but we don't want you to trust us. We want you to question, you know, question everything. I mean, I think in this world that we live in, there is everybody has their motive for doing things. And not that that wasn't the same, you know, years ago either. But I think because when you speak, it can go, and when anyone speaks, it can be amplified in so much more than it was in those, you know, in back in the day type of thing. That I just think that, you know, more and more people have to just question everything, because it's, you just can't take anything for granted. Even the people that you can trust. I mean, even, you know, doctors, nurses, you know, lawyers, you know, people who had, you know, your best interest at heart at one point, no longer do. You know, the medical system now is a system of keeping you sick. You know, it's a system of, if you don't come to me as a doctor, I don't make money. So I'm, you know, and I don't think they do it knowingly or willingly, but it's the way the pharmaceutical industry is set up, for sure. I mean, it's, you know, oh, you took that, and we have a side effect pill, you know, pill for that side effect. We have a pill for that side effect too. Yeah. And it's a money industry. And so, you know, I think the day of your, you know, local family doctor that came to your house and actually spent time and, you know, knew your family and was there for the benefit of your family,
right,
has gone. I mean, it, especially with the insurance industry, you know, I mean, doctors have 7 minutes to treat you.
Right.
What your problem is, they have, if you're there on insurance, they have 7 minutes to treat you. That's nothing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, you can't even get across what are your main symptoms in 7 minutes.
That's right. Exactly.
Let alone go through a risk evaluation, you know, benefit risk evaluation of what medication you should go on, or, you know, talk about nutrition. I mean, doctors aren't even taught about nutrition, but, you know, if they were, you know, to talk about nutrition, to talk about your sleep, to talk about, you know, I mean, all the things that.
Yeah. 7 minutes, basically.
7 minutes, you can't do anything.
Can't do anything. You can't even tell. Yeah. Yes. So, okay. So just in terms of like the 7 or 8 people who are now possible presidential candidates for the Democrats, do you have any thoughts about, you know, when they talk about the health plan? I just always sort of shake my head, because I just think nobody ever seems to talk about prevention. Nobody ever talks about how our bodies can heal without, it's always like, well, we have this health plan, but I'm just sort of surprised that people don't ever talk about that.
Well, so I think Marianne Williams.
Yeah, she was great.
So she actually does. She has talked about that, and
yes,
about preventative and health and nutrition and how, yes, that fits into it. I think she's the only one, and she's definitely seen as a quack on that. I mean, she's seen,
yes,
you know, oh, you're just the floofy level, you know, crazy little lady kind of thing.
Exactly. But she's also ended her campaign.
Yes. And, but other than that, you know, I mean, part of it is whoever gets into the presidential office has been backed by the pharmaceutical industry, essentially, yeah, right, backed by the pharmaceutical industry. And so, you know, they have to toe the line. They can't come out and say, oh, we're going to support nutrition and eating organically. Well, you've just gotten rid of two major donors, Big Ag and Big Pharma.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, yes, it's a huge problem.
Yeah. I mean, people ask me, you know, what is the one thing that I would do? I would get rid of money in politics.
Exactly.
I know. If we could get rid of that, really get rid of that, the landscape would look so much different, because our politicians would actually be acting on science and on true data and on their constituents. What do their constituents want?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we don't have that. So that's my, you know, I don't think we'll ever really get there. But if I could change one thing in the world tomorrow, it would be that. Take the money out of politics.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Yes. Whoa, yeah. Seems so sensible.
Yes.
far too sensible. Okay. Well, and so where do you see a voice for choice going now, in terms of you're kind of sitting on hold for a few years with when you're talking about PAN is not
No, so we're, I mean, our big piece is so that in 2023.
Uh-huh.
Be ready and to have the legislature understand our side of the issue. We have two bills that we're trying to get authored this year. But it's having that communication and those conversations now in the next 2-3 years. Right. So that when we come in 2023 with a bill, the people, the legislature understands the science, understands the issues. Because I do think a large part of it is Senator Penn.
Yes.
And his passion for this. You know, people ask me, why was New Jersey able to stop their bill? They stopped it for now. It's coming back. But I think part of it is that Senator Sweeney, who authored that bill, isn't passionate about it like Senator Penn. I mean, Penn is, you know, beyond fanatical on the vaccine issue. And because of that, it puts a whole different dynamic on California politics. So we're working hard for the next 3 years in Sacramento to build those relationships with other legislators and Democrat legislators, because we have a majority Democrats. And that's what I would say to every, you know, I'm a big solutions-based person. And so, you know, to anyone listening to this, if you, you know, feel like, wow, what can I do? It's, you know, on this issue, I would say there are two things that I tell people to do. Number one, spread the word, plant the seeds. You're never going to convince somebody overnight, but at least plant the seeds. Tell them to read the package insert the next time before they go back at the vaccine. So they know what side effects there are.
Right.
So spread the word. And then the other one is know your legislature. So go to all of their coffee events. Go, you know, they should know you. But, you know, I stand in my senator's coffee morning and he knows me and he's like, hi, Christina. And, you know, I put my hand up and he's ready for my question.
Exactly. That's what I did that when I moved here many years ago. Yeah. I made sure to go and meet Assemblymember Nazarian. So when I actually went this summer, he knew who I was. So it was an element of trust that I think built.
And it doesn't, you know, you don't have to barge in there on the vaccine issue. It's better if you don't go talk to them about something else that they're doing. You know, if they're doing stuff in the homeless or with education, I mean, they all have their pet projects that they work on, special needs kids, you know, they have their thing that they're focused on. If you can get a relationship with them on those issues, then when, you know, when other issues come up, they will not see you as this crazy person that's, you know, yelling about vaccines. It's Christina. Yeah, she does great stuff in the community. Oh, you know, I should probably listen to her because she makes sense on all these other issues.
Exactly. And I think that's also for Nazarian. There were a few of us like that who knew him before. And so it made it much easier to discuss.
And I will say, I mean, he's much more personable than others. You know, I mean, there's a change, a difference in type of legislatures. The other thing that I would say, you know, we've got an election year coming up this year. Know who's running for those seats and make sure that you're supporting and getting the right person into office and not somebody who doesn't support our cause.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I just wanted, you know, when you talk about Pan being so fanatical, do you have any understanding of why he's like that? Does anybody know his life story or something that we could understand a bit more? Why is he taking this position so strongly?
I think he is just that personality type. And I think he, you know, I think it was put out there and he picked this up. And, you know, as much as I just think he has, you know, this is his cause. This is his, I mean, he lives and dies by this cause kind of thing. I mean, he's similar to Paul Offit. He's similar to Peter Hotez. You know, he has taken this on as his thing, and he cannot see beyond his fanaticism, and I think he's just that type of personality, you know.
Have you really tried to talk to him?
We had a meeting with him. We are the only group that actually met with him on SB76, although I think we know he did it only to say, oh, I met with the opposition, because he did it the morning, like literally he left our meeting to go put the bill on the Senate floor.
I remember that, yeah.
But he, you know, we talked to him and all he wanted to tell us about was how awful the anti-vaxxers were and how, you know, if we don't condemn everyone who speaks, you know, whether it's on social media or anywhere else that speaks out against him personally, then, you know, we're just the same as them. And we're, you know, I sat there and I was like, okay, I understand all that, but can we talk about amendments? Can we talk about this bill? And he basically was just like, no, you're sitting here and I'm going to tell you that, you know, unless you come out and condemn everything, you know, everyone, literally everyone, even the person with the sign, you know, standing down there, You know, you're, and I was just like, this is ridiculous. I mean, this is, you know, you are, I mean, he's just so incredibly arrogant you know, it's his personality as to why he's like that. You know, I mean, it's the person he is.
Yeah. I always feel like someone has a backstory. I'd like to know how he became so fanatical, but that's just.
I think, you know, if I had to guess, and I don't know, you know, I'm talking off the top of my head, but from, you know, I have a psychology degree as well as a statistics degree. And, you know, I would put him as one of these people that was probably bullied at school, probably, you know, didn't have a great time, doesn't have very high self-confidence.
Right.
This has, you know, propelled him up to be this, you know, oh, I can be in the limelight. I can be, you know, the tyrant here. And I just think that, you know, that's, if I had to guess, that's the story.
Yeah. See, that's exactly, that's what I think. I mean, I can't say that about him because I don't know him. I've never even.
No, I don't either. So, I mean,
I think that that's probably where that's coming from. And that I think that that's just something I wanted to say was that, you know, a lot of this ignorance is just coming out of insecurity. So that there's this arrogance that happens because of the ignorance. And our lives should not be affected by people who are feeling insecure.
Yeah.
Just like right now, who's sitting in the White House right now, you know, our lives are affected. Our planet is affected by someone who's so friggin' insecure about themselves. And that is so frustrating because it's not being led by wisdom. There isn't led by someone who's actually doing the research. And so I really want to just really applaud you and really give my appreciation to your organization and for all it does in terms of, you know, people and parents and the children and you know, we need a voice for choices like you have. And so thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thankfully I'm passionate about it. And I wouldn't say it's easy to do, but it's something I love to do. And so, you know, to me it's, you know, putting kids in a better place, a healthier place. You know, is so important for our world. So
yes, well, I really thank you so much for your work and thank you for this interview. Really appreciate
you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh, thank you to you both. I will think about what I put into my body and I will introduce myself to the government officials. Oh, that will be fun.